I'm done with the new music.
Hip hoppity wop wop.
May the fail.
We never promised content.
Come on, let's get this gay show on the gay road.
Back off, man. I'm a scientist. It makes sense now.
Yeah, it's all falling into place. Of course, that place is nowhere near this place.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Made of Fail. I'm Adam.
And I'm Tessa.
And how you been doing lately, Tessa?
I'm all right. I actually just got, like, some people who I've been talking to know that I actually just got back from a trip. I had gone out to California to go visit my parents.
Oh, I bet that was fun.
Yeah. Overall, it was pretty good. It was really kind of a nostalgic trip for me because I haven't actually been out there in a while. But that's, like, you know, that's where I grew up. That's where I went to school. Like, it was kind of weird being back there again. But it was a really fun trip. We did wind up going to, like, Disneyland and such. So, like, you know, the big things that California's known for, like, or one of them.
Did you see Mickey Mouse?
You know what? We actually didn't see anybody in the Mickey. Well, we kind of, what happened was we got there, and it was later in the afternoon, like, because both my brothers are still in school, and so we didn't take anybody out of school for it. We just went after they both got out, and so we weren't there for, it wasn't like an all day thing, so we kind of missed a lot of stuff. There wasn't really a whole lot of time to go looking around for people in costume, unfortunately, because it would have been awesome to get some pictures, but still got to hit most of the big stuff there. It's been like, what, 5 or 6 years since I'd been, so it was really kind of neat going and seeing. And a lot of stuff hasn't changed, but there's a lot of stuff that they have kind of been updating as time's gone by. Like, I don't know how many people, it is kind of a California thing. I don't know how many people actually are familiar with everything in Disneyland, but like they most recently, like, well, this, I hadn't seen this until this last time I just went, but the old submarine ride, which had been there forever, and it was kind of just a generic, you know, under the sea thing where you would go and there would be, like, you'd see all these different kinds of, you know, fake fish, and there's a giant octopus and a giant squid, and then you would get to the part where there's, like, this big sea serpent, mm-hmm. and there's mermaids, so it was just kind of a fun little thing, but it was really generic. They had emptied that out. They'd emptied the actual, like, lake out that you would do that in for a while, and it had been closed. When they reopened it just recently, it became a Finding Nemo ride.
Oh, I bet that was interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of like if they had made it, like, I guess this, it's basically like Finding Nemo 2 as far as, like, the story of the ride, sort of, like, Nemo, and I don't remember the turtle's name, the little turtle. But the two of them go off, and so it's like, oh no, Nemo's gone again. We have to go find him again. But yeah, it was really fun. I don't know if it's projections on the screen or if they had little things under the water for it, but it was like the entire thing was kind of animated. There were very few, like, actual fish, like, actually, like, the things that were in there, because it used to be, like, little statues and stuff in there, and now it's mainly an animated thing, and most of the scenery is still actually in there, but the characters were all, you know, for the most part, they were all, like, just animated things on the screen.
Right. I've never been to Disneyland in California. I've mostly been to the one in Florida.
Right.
And it's been, oh Lord, years since the last time I went there, but I really enjoyed it when I went. But talking about getting back on the things that have changed, I remember reading that the Pirates of the Caribbean that was in Walt Disney World, kind of rebranded that to be more in sync with the movies. They've got like Johnny Depp doing voice acting and it,
yeah,
that kind
well,
of thing.
And that's one of that same thing's changed over in the California park too. It's not a huge change. I mean, the majority of the ride is still identical to what it was. They've just stuck, you know, animatronic Johnny Depp in there. They've changed some of the soundtrack as you're going through, so that they make reference to the fact that Jack Sparrow is there. So, like, when you're like, one of the first things you come up to is this, it's this big battle going on between. There's a pirate ship, and they're fighting like this fortress thing. The original one just had them yelling back and forth at each other, like, and the captain was just, you know, a generic pirate guy, which was kind of nostalgic here. Like, when you go back and find the old soundtracks for it, it's kind of nostalgic listening to it, because it's not there anymore, because now it's Barbossa on the ship, and he's, like, instead of, like, just generic battle thing going on, it's like, oh, bring out Jack Sparrow, and it's, and then, like I said, you have the animatronic Johnny Depp at several different points in the ride, and it's become more. There's a little bit more focus on him than on everything else in the ride, at least like what it used to be, but it's still more or less the same. Other than that,
I'm glad you had a good time. I haven't been doing anything. I've just been doing boring adult stuff.
Aww.
Yeah, been getting paperwork together, all that fun adult crap. So
yeah, well, you finally have gotten your been getting somewhere with the issues with some of your legal stuff.
Yeah, it's just been one boring meeting with people after another, and I'm toward the end, and I think I've just about got resolved. So that only took me 4 or 5 years.
Well, I'm glad to hear that it's finally almost done.
You and me both, sister.
Being an adult is overrated.
Yeah, for reals. But
so speaking of not being an adult, so just this last, it's what? It was this last weekend. It's within like a week or two. I don't remember the exact day it came out. But the new, quote-unquote new, because it's a remake, but the new Pokemon games just got released for the DS.
Yeah, I've been meaning to pick that up, but I'm trying to save up money for Secret Undisclosed Project.
Da-da-da!
Scream!
Yes. We love to keep our listeners in suspense.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, I actually picked up Heart Gold, recently. I haven't gotten too far in it yet, because I actually like kind of just got it a couple days ago. But
I've been meaning to ask how much like the original is that?
Well, just for people who don't know, it's basically it's a remake of the Gold and Silver games, which were it was the second generation of the games, because it started out, you know, with Red, Blue, Yellow kind of doesn't count as its own thing. But,
yeah, Yellow was just blatant that was just a blatant marketing thing.
Yellow was fun. It was kind of, but
the thing I didn't like about Yellow is they gave like it more follows the first few seasons of the anime. So they give you a Pikachu and it doesn't go in the Pokeball and it follows you around and all that good stuff.
Well, they actually took that idea of not having Pikachu in a Pokeball and they used that for this remake. I kind of wish they had. It's one of the things that I actually kind of wish was a little bit different. The way they have it right now is that whichever Pokemon is at the very front of your list, that one follows behind you. It's not in the Pokeball. I kind of wish they would let you just pick one to not have in the Pokeball instead of making it be your first one out, because that means if you ever switch, like if you have one that you like having out to walk around with you, you have to have that in front, and that's not always what you're going to do.
Actually sounds pretty funny, because me being me, I usually have a team full of exceptionally dangerous, ferocious-looking Pokemon. Like, right now in my warning, nerd alert, but right now my Pokemon Pearl game, I have a Gyarados out in front. Right. So now I'm imagining this, like, 10-year-old kid with, like, a 80-foot-long Chinese dragon spewing death behind him. And
it's kind of funny, because they have kind of a generic set of things that they do when you turn and talk to them. And I actually had one of my friends kind of make this joke where, because one of the things that happens is, like, when they're happy, they'll nip at your feet, which is, like, really, really adorable for the little tiny ones. Like, you can just imagine it, like,
pouncing around your feet. Like a Squirtle, yeah, that's adorable. But
you imagine it pouncing around your feet, kind of, like just being cute. But, like, the huge ones, it's, like, so he kind of drew this little comic where it's, like, this little tiny one nipping at the trainer's feet. And he's, like, aw, that's cute. And then it's, like, this big fur alligator, like, with most of the trainer stuffed in its mouth for the same emote.
It's eating villagers. That's so adorable.
But yeah, just to give a little bit more background, the original games came out for the Game Boy, and it's probably the most, I kind of want to say it's the most complete game, like, Pokemon game, and that sounds kind of weird, but, I just remember that, like, maybe that's just me, like, thinking through, like, nostalgic tinted glasses or something, but I just remember having that one feel a lot more like it was a full game than the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Is there, like, because I'm trying to, like, put this into terms that people who don't, and we're probably losing the people who don't play the games, because I don't really know how to put this to make it.
I think it's pretty safe to say that a lot of our listener base plays these games, even if they won't admit it.
Well, I mean, I was part of that, like, I was within that age group, I guess. I don't know. I was late elementary school, early middle school when the Pokemon games came out, and
I was late middle school, and I have no shame.
Oh, no, I still, like, I am unapologetic about the fact that I'm still a Pokemon fan, even at, you know, age 24, and it's, like, I'm a grown-up, and I'm playing these kids' games, but you know, there's a whole community out there of people who play these games and, like, have, like, these, like, play it strategically and, like, play it competitively. And they're, you know, they're grown-ups who have, like, analyzed the stats of this game and how to most effectively, you know, create just, like, super-powered things to... And I'm not that deep into it because, like, there's really technical things that you can do in that game to just make it so that you just completely destroy everything. And it's almost not fun playing with those people unless you're another one of those people. I have a friend who...
TV Tropes. Sorry, guys. We're going to link you to TV Tropes on the show notes. You'll be there all day. I make no apologies. But they actually call that the stop having fun guy.
Yeah. Well, I have a friend that that I don't even bother trying to play the game with him because he... And it's like the whole effort value training thing where... But, like... it's impossible to beat him unless you spend as much time doing, like, building up your guys as much as he does, kind of thing.
Yeah, and at that point, you're getting into Nietzsche. He who fights Stop Having Fun Guys makes the risk of becoming a Stop Having Fun Guy himself. Because I play a lot of strategy games, but I don't go for, like, what is going to be the most overpowered thing so nothing can ever oppose me. I go for whatever's going to make me giggle the most. Like, winning a game with, like, just massive rushes of, like, tier 1 units, or, like, I usually do in Pokemon, I'm someone like my mother now, but getting a team of just, like, the most badass Pokemon, like Gyarados, I like as I am.
Well, you can always cheat by using the legendaries.
The legendaries don't really... That's the thing, because Gyarados just seems much more cool than a lot of the legendaries. Hmm. Except for, like, Zapdos. I have a huge fan crush for Zapdos.
But yeah, because I just remember... And so far, it's a really good... Like, the remake is really, really good. There's a lot of things that Gold and Silver introduced to the series. Like, I think, I'm pretty sure that was the first time you started having, like, the Pokemon actually have a gender specified for them, because you could start doing the breeding thing.
Yeah.
it was when they introduced, like, the berries and the hold on, like, you could actually give your Pokemon something to hold on to, and, like, they'd use them intelligently in battle. Like,
XP share is the best thing ever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because that used to be, I'm trying to remember how that worked in the original.
Used to, in the original, you just have to put the Pokemon you wanted out in front, then when you started battle, you'd swap them out and hope that
There was an experience share in Red and Blue. I think what it was it gave everybody in the team experience instead of just one.
Yeah, it was like kind of a really low percentage or something.
Well, yeah, because you're splitting it five ways as opposed to two. But
I freely admit to using the good old fashioned Missing No cheat.
Oh, everybody did.
Oh, yeah.
Missing No is one of those, like. I don't know of anybody who didn't. I just remember, like, in, like, my middle school, playing with people who, you know, would use that to get, like, the rare candy trick, and so you'd have people with level 100 stuff. Well, and the original games were kind of broken, so, like, you could do ridiculous things before they finally, like, balanced it out for... I think they balanced it out a little bit in Gold and Silver, and then more so for the Game Boy Advance versions.
Yeah.
But what I liked about those games was that it's the only, I mean, and admittedly, I think the main adventure is slightly shorter because of this compared to the other ones, but it's the only game out of this entire series where you'd finish your main adventure and then you'd have a whole second thing to go do.
Right.
Cause what they had was you would go through the Johto region, which, and then once you got to the very, like the, all of the games are like this where you, you're basically going from town to town, you're challenging the gyms, and then as soon as you beat all of them, then you move on to the overall, like, league champions, the Elite Four. And then there's the side stories where you're dealing with, you know, whatever bad guy team is in the game. But,
It's a lot like Zatoichi in that respect. Wandering from town to town, only instead of sword fights, there's, monster fights.
Yeah. Kinda, in Gold and Silver, once you finished that part of the game, once you beat the league, you then went back to the Kanto region, which was the areas in the original Red and Blue games, and you went and you basically got to play, Red and Blue. With your characters from, like, you basically got to play the original games over, which was kind of awesome. Like, and it was updated for, like, because it was, I don't remember exactly how many years after Red and Blue and Gold and Silver takes place.
But it was a fair, I think it was like two or three.
It was 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
But so, like, everything's slightly different because it's been, like, time has actually passed. And so it's like, you get the standalone, you get, like, its own game as Gold and Silver, and then you basically get to play a sequel to Red and Blue. And it just basically felt like you got two games in that thing instead. And it's like all the other ones, you get to the end, you beat the Elite Four, and there's not really a whole lot to do at the end there. I mean, there is stuff to do, but it kind of just feels like...
Pretty much the only thing you can do after you beat the Elite Four in Red and Blue is go to the cavern and try to get Mewtwo and some other high-level Pokemon.
Right. So you do have that. That was all in Red and Blue, though. I mean, you could just go back and just continuously challenge the Elite Four, but that kind of got old really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, in the later games, they did add stuff. Like, you do have extra areas to go through, and then they added, like, the battle parks and stuff that you could go and do. But, like, it feels like endgame stuff, which is awesome, but it does get old pretty fast, at least for me. Like, Gold and Silver is the only one I can actually remember out of the series that actually gave you more game to play at the end of the game.
Right.
Like, of course, you get to the end of that part, and then you're pretty much in the same boat with it being endgame stuff, but it just felt like they made the effort to give you more. Now, again, I think, looking back on it, it probably is a shorter adventure altogether because they did that, and so it kind of maybe artificially feels longer. But even still, it kind of still feels like they gave you more than in the other games. It's an illusion that works, I guess. So,
I'm still... I stopped playing for a long time, but I just now re-picked up Pokemon Pearl, and I have completely forgotten where I am in the story, because I got Pearl, nothing.
Pearl was a really good one, as far like this. It had one of the better stories, I think. Although I still think Gold and Silver probably, and again, it may just be a nostalgia colored glasses because of like how long ago it was, I guess. But I just remember Gold and Silver seeming like it had the best story. Team Rocket was always the best bad guy team, even though it didn't get like, honestly, as much as I like the newer games, like it did start to get kind of ridiculous what the bad guy teams were going for.
We're going to either A, raise the water level so that we can have more land, or B, or rather, lower the water level so we'll have more land for people to live on, or B, raise the water level so people will have more fish to eat or something insane like that.
Yeah, well, because it's, starting with, you know, Ruby and Sapphire, and then even more so in Diamond and Pearl, it's like they started getting into, like, this whole thing where the bad guy teams were more James Bondish kind of thing, where they kind of wanted to play God.
Now, at that point, you're entering into the realm of comic book supervillainy.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I kept expecting Lex Luthor to come at me with like a Jigglypuff or something. Actually, that would be the best thing. Fanfic writers, get on that. Superman, I choose you.
That is awesome. Because I mean, especially Diamond and Pearl, because it literally gets to the point where, like, you're, like, the bad guys in that literally want to, like, destroy the world, and it kind of gets a little ridiculous, whereas Team Rocket, it was always just, like, they were kind of like the mafia of like, the Pokemon world, where they're a crime syndicate, but they don't reach any farther than that. They're not trying to, like, destroy the world or anything. They're just, you know, criminals.
Yeah. You come to me on the day of my daughter's wedding and ask me to steal Pikachu for money. Apparently this is the movie impression episode.
Yeah, I guess. Except I'm not doing any of it, so. But yeah, I don't know. I just like Team Rocket better than the other. And again, you know. And I liked that it also kind of went a different direction by actually giving your rival a personality beyond just, oh, hey, I'm your rival, and I'm either a douche or I'm annoying.
Yeah. Gary Oak is, not to be uncharitable, but good God.
Yeah, Gary / Blue / whatever you want to call him. Which I guess he was called Green in the show. Anyways.
That's the ultimate mark of your parents not loving you. They mean you after a secondary color. What are we going to name this kid, Jan? Aquamarine.
Well, to be fair, that the hero was named Red, so.
Well, Red is a legitimate name. Green, not so much.
Well, I mean, the American version, it was Blue, because this is me being a complete dork, but the American version original ones were Red and Blue, and the original Japanese were Red and Green, for whatever reason, and then they came out with the Blue version later, and I'm just going to shut up, because I'm going to go into way dorkiness.
I think it's a little bit late for that.
Well.
We're already there. But going back to Team Rocket, I've always enjoyed them more because I got into it from the TV show, I guess. And I've just always enjoyed Team Rocket in the TV show, just because.
Well, they kind of make
you feel
the show,
bad
to be
for
honest.
Them. I mean,
well,
yeah.
You kind of, I mean, at a certain point, because, well, like the original, like the first season, I'm actually like it, you don't hate Ash like as much as you tend to. This is one of my main complaints about the TV series, is that they kept Ash as the character, like, forever, and the entire series just revolves around him.
Yeah, Ash is the prototypical idiot hero archetype.
I know. Well, and he's okay in the first season. I just wish that when they got to the end of, like, the Red and Blue storyline, that they dropped him and moved on to a new character.
Yeah, because, like, honestly,
I actually, like, when I almost got back into the series when the Diamond and Pearl one started, because it actually started out looking like they were going to make, like, not only switch to a new main character by introducing, I don't remember her name in the series, but the girl character from Diamond and Pearl, they introduced her, like, within the first few episodes of that series, and I'm like, holy crap, we're not only having a new character, we're actually going to have a female lead, which would be, like, awesome. And then it was like, okay, a couple episodes down, oh nope, here's Ash, and this girl becomes the Misty of this season, and she's only going to be interested in the contest because we can't have girls fighting.
By the way, those contests are the stupidest idea ever.
I actually don't mind the contests too much. I'm not big into them, but I intensely
dislike them.
what I really hate about the introduction of the contest is that as soon as those showed up, basically there cannot be a main female character in that series anymore who is not obsessed with the contests and nothing else.
Yes, because of course a girl wants a cute Pokemon that don't know how to rain down elemental destruction upon their foes.
Well, to be fair, that tends to be the kind of teams I go for anyways, as I tend to go for the cute ones anyways, but...
I'm pretty much all team Hacky Slashy Bernie.
This is just me, but I love having, like, completely adorable, huggable Pokemon that can completely kick people's ass.
I'm pretty much in the exact opposite, because, one, I like things that can... I think my team in Gold and Silver is like Gyarados, Scyther, Alakazam, and I think a Steelix and like two others.
When you see
my team, I want you to think, ah!
This is how much of a girl I am about this. In my original playthrough of Red and Blue, I actually refused to evolve my starters beyond their first form because I didn't want them to stop being cute.
Well,
I had a level, 60, whatever, Bulbasaur at the end. And, of course, I couldn't beat anybody in a match, like, any versus stuff, but I didn't care about that. I just played, like, the one-player version of the game. So,
I leveled up with a Charizard because, hey, Dragon.
And a lot of people did. Like, that. I think Charizard was kind of probably the most popular out of all of them. Mm-hmm. I pretty much either went with Bulbasaur or Squirtle just because I thought they were adorable and I wanted to hug one. But
does turn into Blastoise, and Blastoise is pretty awesome.
Yeah, but see, I never got it to the point of being a Blastoise because I didn't want it to evolve. But yeah, that was kind of what turned me off from the series, to be honest, is that they now I don't mind the fact that Team Rocket's still there because, again, they kind of make the show.
It's all pretty much Team Rocket. In fact, yeah. I like when I first got the internet, that was my introduction to fandom as a whole. It was actually called Rocket Shipping.
That's awesome.
Yes.
But, I mean, honestly, like, if they did what I, like, they should have me write these things, I guess, but,
write Pokemon, there would just be unending amounts of just crazy awesome, crazy awesomeness.
See, we should run the world.
Yes.
Is basically what it comes down to.
I keep telling people that, but they won't return my calls.
The whole diplomacy thing only goes so far. There's a time, there eventually comes a point where you have to pull out the bazooka.
Oh no. Once I take over the world, I'm going to submit my claim with space-based weaponry.
Well, there you go.
Because I read too much Warhammer novels.
Anyways, though, I'm basically repeating myself now, but I really do think that once they got into like the golden, like the Johto stuff, everything past that, like each season should have swapped main characters to just starting over kind of thing. In my opinion, at least, because but you know, that's the reason I don't watch the series anymore. So,
because Ash Ketchum never learns his lesson.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine with him being, it was fine with him being kind of just the dumpy, dorky, stupid trainer who either won his badges out of pity by the end, which that kind of got old really fast.
Yeah.
Or, you know, his overpowered Pikachu would come in and do.
Yeah, I think that Pikachu is actually a reincarnation of Shiva.
Also, yeah, and again, like, would it kill them to actually have a female lead for just one season? I'm sorry, but...
I know, for real, right?
Anyways, though.
Oh, so Japan.
We've probably, you know, driven away enough listeners by now by geeking out over Pokemon for half an hour, so maybe...
We've gotten else. Even more.
Well, hey, there we go. We've changed the demographic.
Yes.
Or...
Look on the bright side of life.
Doo-doo. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. That's the thing, though. Like, I think it was there was that period of time where everybody was into Pokemon, whether or not they wanted to admit it, kind of thing.
Because that's one of the great geek shames is thing. Everyone has a few.
Well, yeah, there's a few from our generation. I think one is Pokemon that is the stuff that people like secretly loved and nobody would admit it, kind of thing.
Right.
Past a certain point.
A year or two ago, or maybe even a little bit longer, but Dungeons and Dragons was like that.
Yeah,
no one wanted to admit it being that geeky kid in like junior high funny looking dice.
Right, well, because there's such a stigma attached to it that, you know, if you play D&D, you live in your parents' basement and are, you know, overweight and, you know, have 5-inch thick glasses and, you know, there is just that stigma attached to it that only certain types of people play D&D, and it's not, admittedly, there are people who definitely fit that description, but I really don't think it's inaccurate. It's at least not now.
Better get back up here. This is a song about a guy you might remember from high school. Or you might be this guy from high school. I don't know. My little harmonica. I got my 12-sided die, and I'm ready to roll with a wizard and my goblin crew. My friends are coming over to my mom's basement, bringing Funyuns and the Mountain Dew. I got a big broadsword made out of cardboard, and that stereo's a pumping Zeppelin. It's that time of the night, we turn on the black light, let the Dungeons and the Dragons begin. It's D&D! With the legends of yore, it's D&D. Never kissed a lady before. Nope. Woo!
Yeah, because now we have people like Vin Diesel playing D&D.
It's back to that kind of thing that it's kind of. Currently, it's kind of a cool trend. It's cool to be a nerd right now. And
yeah, thank goodness, because, yeah.
I don't know. We've started playing 4th edition. We have our Skype game that we've been doing, the Made of Fail crew.
Yes.
Which has been fun, although we haven't. It's kind of been on hiatus for a little bit, but we'll get back to it eventually. Shout out, Dana.
I have something going whenever I can get everyone together.
Yeah, it's trying to herd the cats together. And,
yes, trying to herd cats is basically a GM's job description.
Yeah, well, and we have a game that's going to be starting that I'm playing with some friends in the area. That's going to be, I'm really looking forward to it.
I am extremely jealous. My local D&D game's kind of dried up with the poor weather because people have been sick and it's just been... one thing after another.
Well, it's kind of hard to... I mean, you have to find people in the area that also play, and then you have to set up... then you have to, like, figure out when is a good time for everybody, and then you have to, like, decide where people are going to meet up. It's kind of there's a lot of work that goes into it that, yeah, that isn't always...
That's one thing I will say about being a GM and running a game. Either you have organization skills or you will gain them in a damn hurry.
Right.
Because otherwise you're never going to get anything done.
Well, and I'm actually still fairly new to Dungeons & Dragons. Like, the first game I played was, I think, a 3.5 game, and that wasn't even very long. So I'm still fairly new to the concept of the game.
Well, I'm still pretty new to 4th edition, because I've never actually gotten a chance to play myself. I've only run, like, two games for other people.
Right.
So I still haven't been able to play any of the characters I've been rolling up, and I've got some pretty good ideas, but like I said...
Well,
my game that I play locally is 3.5, and no one wants to play 4th, so...
Just having been looking through the handbooks, there's some pretty... Like, your characters just become, like, amazingly epic by the end, it seems like.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's always been the case, or if this is something...
No, like, this is pretty... It's much more, because in 3.5, you had to actually go looking for your epicness, but in 4th edition, epicness is part of the concept.
Right. Well, I mean, because you start out, like, they actually called what, level 1 to 10, like, the heroic levels, where you're already kind of, you start out being kind of a full-fledged hero kind of thing.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily have to play out that way, like, role-playing-wise, I guess, but as far as, like, your abilities go, you already kick ass.
Then I think the next one is the Paragon tier,
right?
Where you're the best of the best of the best, where you're going into the like alternate universes and stomping demons in the head.
Well, that's and then you get to the very end, and it's like the epic tier where you basically like a lot of like especially for like the divine classes, you effectively become a god, and it's kind of like. Holy crap.
That's one thing, because wizards become, like, one with the very idea of magic or something, or potentially can. Well, and
it's
warriors just become, I can punch gods in the face. I don't really have much of a destiny beyond that.
Well, like, for the martial stuff, like, having looked at that, it's a generic martial epic destiny, but it's basically, like, you... become some kind of ruling whatever, like a king or...
Yeah, you become like... You become Conan at the end of Conan the Barbarian.
Kinda, yeah. Which, and I actually think that's pretty awesome, too. I mean, for some of the classes, it's actually a little somber, because the Epic Destiny is kind of... There's not... For a lot of them, there's not really any gray area. Your character is going to... not be around anymore at the end of the campaign,
well,
kind of thing.
Everything dies, of course, but...
Right, but I mean, it's like, okay, well, especially like for the divine stuff, which is what I've been looking at, because I'm thinking of rolling an Avenger for the game that we're gonna be playing out here, like, especially like for the, like, you become like an angel, or you become a god, or like you are the avatar of your god, like, and then by the end, it's like, okay, your time on the mortal realm is done, you're going to either be one with your god, or basically it's like, okay, this character that you've been playing that, you know, was mortal for at least 20 levels is now going to be dead, and it's like there's no real question about it. By the end of it, your character will not exist as it did at the beginning,
right,
anymore.
There is no Dana, there is only there is only Paylor.
But yeah, really looking forward to that. It's. I've always kind of been a role player. I'm the kind of person who, even before, you know, getting into anything where I would be role playing with other people, like I would, you know, take my toys and I would, you know, act out big adventure and stories stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, right there with you.
So, I mean, I've kind of, like, in that regard, I've always been a role player, I think, and,
Yeah, and some of my action figures as adventures were pretty epic.
Well, like, I actually have, it's kind of funny, I'm going to say this, and honestly, this hasn't gone anywhere, so, and it may not ever go anywhere, but there's, eventually, I may finally get it down on paper or something, but there's a, series of novels I would like to eventually write, kind of like a fantasy series, and I honestly came up with the original concept for it when I was like probably like 15 years old, playing with my brother's Legos.
Yeah, Legos have been the impetus behind all of my great ideas.
Well, and it's like, it's kind of, it's something I've built on in my head. Of course, none of it's ever gotten written, like, beyond just writing down concepts, none of it's ever gotten written down as a story. And again, just because of the way that I know that my mind works, it may never actually make it out onto paper. It might. I really like to get to that point, but I also know that I'm very, very easily distracted by things.
So, yeah, so am I. Ooh, shiny.
Ooh, look, a kitty.
You're a kitty.
I like open-ended games like that with D&D, and to a lesser extent, certain MMOs. Like, I mean, it's what I do on Warcraft. Even when we're not on RP servers, which tends to be the only place you can actually, like, roleplay in the open without getting
griefed or something.
Without getting, like, harassed for it. And even then, that's not a guarantee.
Yeah, I actually found it. You remember we used to play on Silvermoon a lot?
Sentinels, you mean?
Sentinels, right. Apparently, apparently the new fan nickname for Silvermoon is Cybermoon. Which gives you kind of an idea, yeah. It's actually kind of a shame, because in WoW, people, it's an MMORPG. Yeah. That doesn't stand for rocket propelled grenade, like some classes behave. It means role playing game.
Well, and I don't have any actual experience with this, but I've heard secondhand from people that, you know, I guess there may still be games like this, but there were games like in the past where it was maybe not expected of you to role play, but definitely it was tolerated, that like it was understood that a lot of people like giving their character actual character.
Yeah, and I mean,
you wouldn't get ridiculed for doing that. Like a lot of people who I know who used to play EverQuest had said, like, you know, it wasn't necessarily, it wasn't expected of you, you didn't have to roleplay, but people knew that roleplaying would happen, and you wouldn't have people that, you know, would stand there and try to ruin it for you just because
right.
they think you're a nerd for trying to roleplay.
And that's the trick, isn't it? Because that's kind of a pot calling the kettle black kind of thing, because you're already playing WoW, you have no room to talk about anyone else's nerdity.
Well, honestly, there's a lot. Warcraft kind of is at a point, I think, where there's just so many people playing that there is definitely like a casual and competitive community, and they're two separate communities. But there's a casual community and a competitive community that are. I won't say they're not nerds. I'm not for a second going to say that, but they're different kinds of nerds, I guess.
Right.
Like they're not into it for the role playing aspect. By any means, they're just either there just to play the game, or they're there to kick people's butt.
And well, I can appreciate kicking butt, because right now I'm leveling a rogue, and that is the most cathartic experience I can ever imagine.
Rogue is the only class I ever played in WoW that I actually enjoyed PvPing on.
Oh yeah, because the rogue I'm leveling right now, I'm leveling subtlety, which is the sneaky stabby spec.
Yeah.
It's the only really spec that makes stealth a core gameplay mechanic.
I guess.
Because, let's face it, combat, not so much.
Well, mutilate spec, you kind of need to be in stealth to gain, you get, you know, bonuses for coming out of stealth when you're starting your attacks, so you're kind of expected, it's not, like, a main mechanic, but it's kind of required that you do it.
Right. But right now I'm leveling subtlety, and I just got Shadow Step, and oh my god, it's just the most fun spell ever.
Shadow Step being an ability where it basically you teleport behind your target, like no matter where you are, kind of thing.
Yep.
You have to be close enough to them to do.
I was actually looking down the talent tree, and I was kind of disappointed that Shadow Dance isn't like a bigger, meaner version of that, because basically what Shadow Dance is, it lets you use your in-stealth abilities when you're not in stealth, and I was kind of like, yeah, that's nice, I guess, but it's not I'm not enthused.
Well, when you think about it, like, if you're well, first off, if you're a dagger rogue, there's it's one of those things that you almost kind of want to be assassination anyways. But there's the whole idea that, you know, with Shadow Dance, you basically get to use ambush several times in succession, which ambush is the huge, like, it's the huge attack out of stealth thing that you, that does a crap load of damage, but you have to be in stealth to use it.
Right.
So if we're going to talk about Warcraft, I guess we have a couple, we're still in the lead up to the next expansion. So we're still kind of in the end game of the, of Wrath of the Lich King. There will be some cool content coming up fairly soon in the 3.3.5 patch.
Yes, the 3.3.5 is where we get to go into the Ruby Sanctum and start killing dragons, which, thank goodness, because I love killing me some dragons.
Well,
actually,
it's supposed to be the lead-in, because Cataclysm, and right now we probably have, like, all of the Warcraft playing listeners, like, knowing exactly what we're talking about, and the ones who don't play Warcraft are completely checking out, because they have no idea what we're talking about. But Cataclysm is going to be, like, where Wrath of the Lich King was very focused on fighting the undead, Cataclysm is going to be very dragon-centered.
Dragons and elementals, I think.
Yeah. And so this is, like, the Ruby Sanctum is the Ruby... There's currently an area in World of Warcraft where it's this big shrine to all the different dragon flights, all the different colors of dragons. And each... one, there's a portal in each one that can take you to their sanctum. Right now, only one of them's open. And what they've been saying is that they probably are eventually going to open up all of them, and they all will be their own little raid instances. It's basically an easy thing for them to fall back on if they need more content.
Right. Guys, they got through that a little bit faster. I don't know. Open up the blue dragon shrine, whatever.
I have a feeling that the dragon...
Let's go into our swimming pool full of money again.
The dragon shrines, I think, are probably going to become the neutral instances where they just throw non-sequiturs at us because they need content.
Well, to be fair, troll instances are... I don't mind the troll instances, although
The problem I have with the troll instances is that the story is pretty much the exact same thing every time.
Yeah. Trolls are messing with some god, kick they ass.
Right, well, it's
pretty
basically,
much.
Okay, this tribe of trolls gets their ass kicked. They decide, oh hey, we're going to go sacrifice our gods to get more power. That gives them, like, huge amounts of power in the short run, and then they get screwed over in the end, and so you're supposed to go kill them before things completely fall apart.
Right.
And it's just the same exact story every time. Like, that's the Zul'Garub story, that's the Zul'Aman story, and it's the same exact story in Zul'Drak. I mean, you get to see it a different... Like, the only thing that's kept it interesting is getting to see that same exact story playing out at different points. Like, Zul'Garub, it's already been done. Like, they've already done this thing with their gods. You're going in and cleaning up after them, kind of.
Right. At one point, you kind of have to wonder, do trolls possess no sense of cause and effect or history at all? Zul'Garub, bunch of trolls killed their gods and they got slaughtered. I bet if we did that, we'd do...
To be fair, all of these different tribes that did the exact same thing are so far separated from each other that they probably didn't know about each other. I mean, they knew that they knew each other existed because in the storyline, they, before, like, all the other races finally got up and, you know, built their civilizations, like, the trolls were fighting each other constantly.
Yeah, trolls invented genocide.
Well, they were doing it to themselves, so... Yeah.
That's just as they judge themselves and not say the dwarves.
Well, I mean, they kind of intended to do it to everybody else after they found out that, oh hey, there's somebody to fight that's not us.
Yeah. And Charles' definition of not us is pretty wide.
Well, that's true. But like, anyways, but I mean,
someone I'm not
immediately
related to.
Well, I mean, because to be fair, the I don't remember, it was the Gurbashi tribe or whatever, that's in Zul'Garub is all the way down at the south of the continent, and then the Imani are all the way in the north, and then the Drakari are in Northrend on a completely different continent altogether. So to be fair, I think they probably didn't know about each other doing the same exact thing.
Well, that brings into the... That begs the question, why are they doing this all in a relatively recent amount of time if they're all, you know, so separated? How are they all getting the same idea at the same time?
Well, that's a good question.
maybe there's another player we haven't been introduced to.
That's true. That could be a really interesting thing to explore.
I actually
really like that idea.
Wow, I just scared myself with how good that idea is.
You should work for Blizzard.
Yes, I should. You hear that, guys? You can hire me and give me money for awesome ideas.
But anyways, so in addition to opening up the Dragon Shrine in 3.3.5, the other thing that I'm really looking forward to is that they are finally giving some story development for both gnomes and trolls, who kind of have for a very long time been given the short end of the stick as far as storyline goes. As far as the playable trolls, at least, the enemy trolls have tons and tons of story.
The Dark Spear Tribe and the Numbergon Exiles have gotten kind of the short end of the lore stick, but we're probably going to see that
effectively. Right. Well, I mean, effectively in the game, trolls get treated like the playable trolls pretty much get lumped, like all of their story has been lumped in with the orcs for the pretty much the entire game. They have so little of their own stuff going on. And same thing with the gnomes, like they have their own things going on, but for the most part, you don't really get a whole lot of gnomish storyline development. It's mostly them, especially with them as their own faction. They've been tied so closely with the dwarves. That they've been needing something for a while, and they are finally getting it, where basically on the gnome side, on the alliance side, what you have is you're finally having the gnomes go and retake their capital city, which has been a dungeon since the beginning of the game, and it still will be a dungeon, because they're only taking, at least for the moment, they're only taking over the surface of the city. Because the dungeon was always you fight your way in and then you go deep within it to try to the whole idea was trying to win it back for them, but they never made any progress because
status quo is God.
Well, because it's just the nature of the game. If there's progress made, that means that the people who haven't done that yet have that progress made for them, and that's not completely fair. Of course, it's nice to see there finally be some development, and it's been long enough at this point that they can get away with doing it.
What I'm wondering is, how much of a city could they build out of the Numbergon that's not instanced?
I don't know.
Here's what I'm thinking they're going to do. I think they're going to push back the instance portal and add some more stuff before it.
See, I would really like that. I would like it to be a full-size city. I don't know if it will be, but it would be really awesome if it was.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that the Echo Isles are going to be a real and proper city.
Right. Well, and so, about that on the Horde side now, you have the trolls taking back their home islands, which that used to be a... Well, it still currently is in the game. It was a start, a very early level quest, group of quests where you'd go over there and beat up the guys that had taken over there. And it's always kind of been a joke within the community that, both on both sides, that the gnomes that are in Ironforge and that are level 80 because they're city guards can't take out, can't clear out an instance that, is level 30. And the same thing on the Echo Isles.
It's actually even worse for the trolls because kicked them out is non-elite and he's level...
Yeah, he's level 10. And you have all these trolls that are level 80 around Orgrimmar and they can't go. So that it's always kind of been a community joke.
Can't Sinjin just go take or rather Zul'jin. Can't he take like 5 minutes to go clear that out?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. But, I mean, it's suspension of disbelief for the story.
Right.
But of course, like for these events, they're raising all the levels to, of these guys to like the 80s to make it actually make sense that you need help to do this. But basically, because you have both the gnomes and the trolls who have had to share cities with another race, finally getting their own cities. And I really hope that they're full cities and not just, you know, token settlements.
Yeah, I think Blizzard is going to do right by this on this one.
Well, what I can't remember if this was an actual Blizzard person who said this or if it was just fans speculating. But I think what I heard floated was that the cities will be roughly the size of Dalaran.
Now, that would be awesome, because Dalaran is, while it's not the biggest city, it's definitely one of the most well-designed. And, we can't guarantee that Numergon and Echo Isles are going to be that well-designed. That's about the right size for a city, because right. There's still a lot of stuff in Dalaran.
Oh, yeah. Well, and to be fair, if they develop, I mean, I'm assuming they're going to change these areas considerably. There's a lot of space both in the Nomergon surface and on the Echo Isles. There's a lot of space there that can be utilized to make a full-size city, I think, for both things.
Actually, now that I'm really thinking about it, the Nomergon surface area that's before the instance is about the same amount of square footage as Dalaran.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, honestly, thinking about it, it's not that much smaller than Ironforge.
Well, yeah, really.
And the thing with Echo Isles, too, I mean, it's not that big, but what I think would be really cool is because of, like, seeing what troll structures look like, having a city that may not be very wide, but that goes up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the cities in, I can't remember what the settlement's called, but in Zangrimarsh, in the Burning Crusade expansion, you have that troll settlement that is not, it's not all that wide. It's not a full-fledged city, it's just a settlement. But, they have, you know, the rope bridges, and they have, you know, tall, it's a very tall settlement.
Now, a troll settlement that's, like, set up in among trees would be the damnedest cool thing I've ever seen in my life.
I would really like to see that happen, where you have, like, just this multi-tiered city, like, where you just climb up and you're going across rope bridges, and you actually, basically like that settlement in Zangrimarsh, only they actually let you up to all that stuff, because...
Now, that would be really cool.
There really wasn't anything up there. Like, you weren't really intended to go up to those bridges, because there wasn't really anything there. So, yeah, I think they could make... Like, they don't have to necessarily... Because there's people who have said, well, you need to expand the size of the Echo Isles, because it's not that big. But I think they could they could make do with what they have if they build up instead of out, which makes sense for trolls, I think.
Yeah. And with... I think they would have to do some fairly severe remodeling with the gnomes, because the area... I mean, yeah, the space is there, but there's not really a whole lot in the way of, like, things you could use for shops and things like that.
Oh, I'm pretty sure they're going to remodel. I would be surprised if they didn't.
Yeah.
But my point is that there's a lot of square footage in there to make use of. To, like, if they do remodel the place, then... But my point is just that they have a lot of space to work with for that.
Right.
Because honestly, when you think, like, again, like I said, when you think about it, it's not that much smaller than Ironforge. It's not as well set up, but they have that space there
to work with. Yeah, I think it's a pretty safe bet there. If they don't do some major redesign on the Echo Isles, they will do it for a number gone.
Yeah. Well, and again, because the Echo Isles are just, it's an open air island, they don't really have to do a whole lot of remodeling there as long as they build a good city out of that.
Right.
And whereas Nomergon's enclosed, it already has things set up. I do think they're going to need to fix a little bit of it at least, and just change the shape of some things.
Right.
But
while we're talking about changing the shape of things, I read something that since Cataclysm's going to let us bring flying mounts into Azeroth, that the Undercity is going to be expanded and into the streets of Lordaeron.
Really?
Yeah, they've actually apparently already done it. And apparently they're really proud of it. Like, it looks really pretty. It looks really good.
Well, I know that because, like, right now what they have for a lot of the cities, the Ruins of Lordaeron is a good example, and Stormwind's probably an even better one, is that they have kind of a forced perspective thing on them. Because you can't fly, like, if you were to, say, load up a private server thing, not that we advocate selling private server things.
Yeah, and not even jokingly, yeah, don't do that.
Yeah. But if you go into just to play around with, you can, like, set the GM settings will let your character fly. If you fly up in Stormwind, most of the city will disappear because there's nothing there. You basically have what amounts to cardboard cutouts in that city to make it look like there's, like, full buildings going, and it'll appear and disappear depending on where you're standing in the city.
Yeah, I know Stormwind Cathedral and the castle are really bad about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because it hasn't needed it. They can get away with that right now because you can't fly in that portion of the game right now. They're going to have to redo all of it, and they've been working on redoing all of that, because once you can fly, that won't cut it, because
because then you can move in three dimensions.
Exactly. Which you kind of already can, you just can't you can't go up.
Right.
But yeah, there's a lot for Cataclysm. We'll have, like, probably we'll have an episode devoted completely to talking about everything
Once we get more information, trust me, you'll hear about it in greatly, whether you wanted to or not. And I guess that brings us to the end of the episode. Hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll see you next month.
Yep. Have a good month, everybody.
See ya.
Stormy shores of Azeroth, a silhouette did stand, a brave and stalwart sailor who gave a helping hand. Without fail on every whim which we did demand, he simply smiled and waved his hand and sent us across the land. Farewell to the placeholder, your ship has sailed to sea. We'll tip our hats and pray one day to be as great as thee. Captain P, you'll never know the emptiness inside as we sit ashore on Menethil.